What's up, Dune fans? Welcome back to the Dune Not Enter podcast, where today the spice is in the wrong hand. I'm your host, Humphrey Shu, and joining me are my friends and co-hosts, Fillmore John.
Hey, guys.
And Nolan Zhang.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back, everyone, indeed. This is, I don't know what episode, but we're going over the second third of Chapter 35. So we'll be starting at the section, Won't a One of Them Can't Escape Fear of Me Because of This Day? And we'll be ending at... We'll be ending at the end of the chapter, right? So anyways, so really exciting, but y'all's weeks are definitely more exciting. So anything to update us on?
It's a pretty hectic week, but this week I started my group 4 project for IB, and we decided to, at least my group, we decided to do prosthetics and like how prosthetics would look like in 50 years. Currently, Whoa. We're on like the design of like making it possible to grow back nerves and like blood vessels to actually like regrow partially part of your arm around like a metal base. But that's like our idea. Hopefully we can like present it nicely enough that like the admins are convinced. But until then, I don't really know.
Wow. Like a titanium base?
Yeah, like titanium base like arm as like your like bone, but now like actually having sensory input by actually having like flesh and like blood to sustain it.
Okay, so you're growing like the cells out of from your own cells to regrow into a new arm.
Yeah, like integrating other people's like grown nerves and blood vessels and somehow integrating into yours like already existent ones.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds so much more sophisticated than what we do in AP. AP classes. IB, just, I mean, I hear IB is just so much more depth, which seems cool.
It's fun, but like, it's just like when you're struggling already with schoolwork, it's like, wow, extra science project. I feel so alive.
It says that in the most dead voice. Yeah, that's so relatable, though. It's just, you know, things you normally enjoy doing, but when it's like on top of everything else, it's just, yeah, no, I'd rather not. Yeah.
I wish I could just dedicate my time onto one specific thing. Yeah. That would be so much more efficient.
Yeah. That, welcome to college.
Yeah.
So that's what we're looking forward to, right? Anyways. Cool. Yeah. So, really cool. So let's get into the chapter. So there's not really an epigraph because it's in the middle of the chapter, and there still will be no epigraph next episode. But instead of the epigraph, we'll have our quote section. So Fillmore, you have the first quote.
Okay. My quote this week is, I dedicate this truth to, and he paused, knowing his uncle would think, the young fool's going to dedicate to Lady Fenring after all and cause a ruckus. To my uncle and patron, the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen.
Wow, how witty.
Indeed.
Okay, yeah. So if you didn't understand that, he paused and he thought about what his uncle would think about him, and then he finished his sentence about his patron, the Baron.
Yeah,
he chickened out.
I don't even know if he really chickened out. He just, you know, he decided against it. It was
made
a wise decision. Indeed.
We'll go farther in depth later.
Yeah, but it's a pretty, you know, funny moment, honestly, in this really weird chapter. I mean, really weird section of the chapter. Anyway, so my quote goes, there's nothing like the arena to expose the true person from beneath the mask. Yeah, so
I agree.
A little cliche, but also a good message nonetheless in any situation. So I'll share my two cents on that and the context later on.
So the quote I chose is, mankind has only one science. It's the science of discontent. So there's been a lot of ups and ahs in this one as well, because guess who said it? The Count Fenring said it again.
The Count Fenring. With his speech impediment.
Yep.
I mean, past self-imposed. That, it's a really good quote past the speech impediment. Yeah. You know what I mean? If it wasn't, if I could just delete it, but it's a quote, so I have to quote it. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah, mankind has only one science. It's the science of discontent. Indeed.
Yes.
Yeah, with a lot of ums and ahs thrown in. Yeah, sounds like me when I'm talking. stutter. Yeah, anyways. Cool. All right. Great quotes. Let's dive into the chapter then. So we're starting off again with the quote, won't be a one of them can escape fear of me because of this day. So what we find out at the very beginning is that Hawat is still alive. So he hasn't been killed yet. So we already kind of know the Baron's plan from what he said before a few chapters ago. But definitely Fenring doesn't seem happy that the Baron kept Tawad alive without notifying the Imperium. And it's really funny that the Baron says, you know, without a Mentat, he feels unsettled, like he's, I don't know, missing a piece of his body or something, right? He's so dependent on a Mentat to strategize and think for him. It's a little bit funny. He has this weird dependence, right?
At the same time, we've seen cases where the Baron is quite competent in the mental side of things. So we shouldn't completely underestimate him. Uh-huh. But it is still pretty funny that he feels uncertain about like what's gonna happen.
Right. I mean, I might be biased, but when has he been competent? Like, when has he been scheming? Like, properly?
I feel like Peter's always done it better, and that's why he wants a Mentat, because the Mentat puts his half schemes into actual schemes. You know what I mean? He actually puts it into action. Mm-hmm. And it works, because the Mentat planned out the little nits and bits that he couldn't figure out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then another thing that I wanted to state is I'm still not sure if Hawat has completely sided with the Harkonnens yet, so we'll have to find out.
Yeah, I highly doubt that either.
So. Yeah, I don't think he would. You know, he's an Atreides through and through, especially given the way he reacted to Jessica and her potential treachery. You know, I don't think it's likely that Hawat would give it up. Yeah, unless there's some serious something serious.
So here we see the Baron, and he's talking to Count Fenring about the betrayer, and he actually says it's actually not Hawat. Hawat's not the one who betrayed the Atreides. Instead, it was the false doctor, which we know as Dr. Yue. So my question is, why does he refer to Yue as the false doctor? Because I don't think Yue was false in any real manner, because he did actual medical care. You know, he was an actual doctor. You know, he passed successfully the highest level of conditioning from the Imperium. I guess the only false thing you could accuse him of was, like, I don't know, his betrayal of the Duke. But even then, like, I mean, I wouldn't say it's understandable or, like, it's even, like, redeemable. But, like, you could kind of understand he was under duress because, like, his love for Wana and the Baron threatening and coming for Wana. But, I mean, like, still, yeah, I don't know.
Right. So, as a doctor, he's not really a false doctor. Like, he does have the proper training, and he's definitely has the mental capacity to be a doctor. But I think he's referred to this way because he was able to circumvent the conditioning, which is meant to be absolute.
That's true.
So this means that he was a false doctor just because of this one event, not because of his skills.
Yeah, I mean, I think false kind of just means, you know, deceptive or fake, not as in he has no skills, but fake as in he put on this, like, facade, right? So something like that. So I think definitely he was a qualified doctor. You know, he came from the terrible suck school and everything, but I haven't had a chance to make that joke in a while. but here we go again, you know, the reiterated jokes podcast. So I mean, he's just the traitor because he deceived all the traitors into believing that it was someone else.
I also ask here how, like, the Count Fenring begins to ask the Baron, so, like, if it wasn't Hawat who betrayed it, now how did you get Hawat to change sides suddenly? Like, how did you get Hawat to support you? And the Baron, when he starts talking about it, he's like, oh, yeah, he actually doesn't give an actual, like, good reason. Instead, he responds with, like, why Hawat has, like, no ways of escaping the Baron. And also, just, like, he has nobody to run to because Duke Leto is dead. And because, most importantly, Hawat is poisoned and he doesn't have the antidote. It's like, oh, that's not really a reason, but sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting how the Baron likes to evade situations like this, because he evades this question, right? He evades the confrontation with that Sardaukar by telling the white lie, and et cetera. And it just makes me think that he's a lot more afraid and paranoid than he lets on, right? And it's also shown in the heightened security around Harko.
I think in Hawat's case, I think he's aware that they're using a poison on his body, because he is a master assassin after all. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he knows his way around poisons, so I think that means that he's putting up a front with them for now so he can get his vengeance on against Jessica or whatever he wants to do. I'm not really sure what the Baron's plans with Hawat is. Maybe he just wants to use him, but I mean, there might be another reason.
I mean, I feel like the Baron is just too naive if he believes that Hawat won't try to scheme his way out of it.
Yeah, to go down without a fight.
He's definitely, you know, he has, think about it, Hawat has nothing to lose. The Baron has everything to lose. Hawat has, the only thing Hawat has to gain from this is causing the Baron more trouble, right? So there's nothing for him to lose. Yeah, now that Peter is gone, you know, the Baron, I can't say he needs a lot, but the Baron, you know, he's just too trusting, right? If he believes that Hawat has just switched allegiances just because of this poison. Honestly, I'd be, since, I mean, if I know I'm going to die anyway, right, might as well try to take down as many as I can.
And that's what Yue did when he bit the capsule. That's when Lido bit the capsule now.
Yeah, I mean, he took out Peter and that guard. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Lido didn't go down without a fight. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And then the Baron survived due to plot armor.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So the Baron has the strong armor too, but it's not as strong as Paul's.
Yeah.
So
we'll see how strong his armor is later on this book.
Yep. So I also think it's surprising that the Count wants the Baron to kill Hawat. Because I don't know what the Count has against Hawat or what information Hawat has that makes him so deadly and dangerous and makes the Count so eager to kill him. But it seems that Hawat has a lot more than we would expect. So there's a lot more to his character. Of course, you know, I'm kind of saying this without needing to say it because we haven't really seen Hawat's character too much. But I mean, just to say it, you know, we don't really know a lot about him and there's so much to figure out. Yeah.
Well, also, before we get too far, the Count is not a double agent, right? It's just the Countess that tried to help the Atreides, not the Count, right?
I feel like...
The lady is due to like Bene Gesserit.
Yeah, it's just because of the Bene Gesserit, but...
Right.
I don't know what the deal is, though. There's some really weird allegiances, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really hard to speculate because we're just, again, not enough info.
Especially with the epigraph revealing like the sadness of the Emperor. So I don't actually know where exactly the Imperium stands in on this, other than that they did send Sardaukar. But at the same time, the Emperor does feel kind of sad that Lido is dying or dead.
I mean, that's really interesting. And I mean, I'll actually just go ahead and skip to this point. I mean, basically the Emperor wanted the Lido ousted, but he wasn't happy with the way the Baron carried it out, I believe, right? Because it was too much of a threat to royalty, or too much of this. And it's really interesting because, you know, we're not sure where the ties of the Emperors are. We thought that Imperium and the Emperor and the Landsrad were against each other, right? But it's not super clear, and we don't know how the Houses Minor tie into this, and you know, the Fenring and the Fremen and all of that, and the guild, right? So it's just
might
so
also even
unclear.
Just be like cousins or something. I don't even know.
It's just this really weird net of power. It's constantly shifting. There's no direct correlation. You know, one minute you think these two people are allied, but you really find out it's other people, and then you're still probably wrong. And so it's just there's, you know, I feel like the only allegiances that we can be confident of are at the really micro level. You know, and even we can't be confident of Paul and Jessica. So it's basically this constantly shifting allegiances. It makes it really, you know, complicated sometimes, but that's what we're here for, to break it down, right?
Yep.
Also, I just wanted to add my two cents on Hawat trying to like be here. I think Hawat in this case also is in the game, but only because the Count doesn't actually have any leverage over Hawat, because Hawat thinks it's Jessica, right? But at the same time, the Baron thinks that Jessica and Paul died in the sandstorm. So technically, he has no, like, he's holding nothing over Hawat. He has no, like, incentive for Hawat to follow him, other than the poison. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that Hawat has, or will figure out some way to mitigate it eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. I mean, if there's anything that can be done with raw brain power, it's probably Hawat. Yeah, he'll be able to figure out a way.
I think Hawat might be the second smartest person in the story as of current.
Behind Paul.
Maybe actually, when Peter was alive, I think Peter was the smartest, and then he was the second smartest then. But now Paul is probably the most.
I mean,
maybe Paul has the most brain power.
Probably the most potential. Yeah.
Yeah, but Hawat is maybe the smartest person.
I feel like Peter, I don't know, Peter and Hawat were fundamentally different because Peter just had no moral standard. So, you know, if you don't have morals, then it's just easy to do anything to accomplish your goal, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, Peter was just this cold, even heartless.
Like, Hawat had the experience advantage, and he still got outplayed in almost every way.
Yeah. Well,
but I mean, Baron did have spice to, you know, like when you're, it's kind of like he paid to win that match.
Yeah, Baron hard paid to win because with that the Sardaukar, you know, 50 years of spice and stuff. I mean, that's the Baron. He's a little bro. His pocket's feeling a little empty, you know.
Yep, it's like when those 5-year olds pull out their mom credit cards to pay to win games.
Yeah.
Oh, but I just want to mention that like it wasn't just the spice that they spent on the starter card. They also spent a lot of bribes on the Lanzerite houses as well. So Baron was mentioning that, that when the Emperor might step against the Baron, he could pull his bribes and coercion that he has among the Lanzerite houses to actually like win against the Emperor. But maybe this is also the exact reason why the houses, when they took over Lido, didn't come flocking to Lido's aid, even though they were like supposed to be like good friends, where like Lido was like their leader, because of the Harkonnen's like bribes in place.
Right. Yeah,
I think that makes a lot of sense actually.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm kind of confused because are the Harkonnens part of the Lanzerite though?
They are. They should. They're a big house.
Right. Because they're a major house. So I mean, it seems like the Lanzerite are again, this is these weird power ties, but the Lanzerite are afraid of the Imperium. So, you know, the Baron and Emperor working together is just so weird. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not clear who's
a member.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the Harkonnens aren't part of the Lanzerite. I think they used to be one of the great houses, but they aren't anymore.
Oh.
Because like I think a couple of chapters ago, it mentioned that the Atreides banished them. And that's what caused their vendetta.
Oh,
but that's just like the planet. I don't know.
Yeah, but
oh, it was just the planet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't even know if it was banished. Maybe it was worse than that. Yeah.
They split because they used to be like from the same house, and then like the Harkonnens used to be like a general or something.
Yeah. So I mean, kind of on a side note,
I don't think they're part of the Lanzerite anymore.
Yeah, but like on a side note, it's really interesting how Jessica found her way back into the Atreides when she was a Harkonnen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jessica Harkonnen. That just doesn't sound right. But it's technically true.
Yeah. Rip.
That's what happens when you don't
know. It doesn't roll off the tongue very well.
Okay.
Indeed. I like Jessica Atreides much more.
Oh, but now we have the Baron standing with inside the same room that he had taken from Duke Leto and Jessica. The same dining hall that we've seen many times before. You know, the old Duke Leto's painting on the wall and the most infamous mounted bull's head there. And on the subject of double meanings that he was talking about, what a coincidence. We see the mounted bull's head, which has been a double meaning for many, many times in this book. Firstly, like the downfall of the old Duke because he was killed by the bull and then they stuffed him. But then it was also like the downfall of Leto because Leto kept looking at the bull. And now the Baron is looking at the bull's head. So, you know, like maybe let's go see the Baron's downfall in this book. But we also did see a lot of plot armor, so I don't really know. We didn't see it play out though.
But like, I mean, I'd be surprised if we don't see the Baron's downfall eventually. But I mean, because he is the main villain, right? But it's great that you pointed it out. And honestly, I don't even know if he's the main villain anymore, considering how complicated everything is. But it's great that you pointed this out because I wouldn't have noticed the symbol otherwise, right? Even the Baron feels a foreboding sense when he sees the bull's head. It's really unsettling. I think it's such a weird thing that he decided to move this specific artifact all the way to Geddy Prime, paying you know premium space shipping fees and getting it all the way over, right?
Yeah,
it's a sort of reoccurring theme that's happening throughout the book. It started with the Duke's father. It happened to the Duke, and now the Baron's next.
The Baron, yeah, probably.
But didn't Paul also get a look at the bull in the beginning of the book?
He did.
So maybe that represents his terrible purpose and not necessarily his downfall.
Yeah, but maybe it's just, you know, maybe it's more of like the owner of the bull's head gets the curse next.
Okay. Or maybe that makes sense. Or maybe it's just like Paul is the one that's like
the one that ends the curse.
Yeah. Like that's kind of a weird
he's
thing,
the chosen one.
Yeah.
He fulfills the curse.
That would be an interesting subplot, you know, the fight against the bull.
It's a bull market now.
Oh, no. Yeah, true. I wish it was a bull market. Yeah.
Okay, now we get to my quote, which is from Count Fenrir, like I said earlier. I'm not going to use the and the Oz this time around because I don't really like saying it again. I'll say the simplified version, which I like better. So it says, mankind has only one science. It's the science of discontent. And when I read it, it kind of really hit home for me because if you know about science, isn't it just like humanity's attempt to appease the ever hungry, like bottomless pit of curiosity inside each of us? Just like what makes humans move is our discontent, you know, like without discontent or dissatisfaction, where will we be, you know? Like if humans suddenly found happiness right now, imagine like a world without any discontentment, what will we do? Like there'd be nothing to do. It'd be like we cleared the last level in a game, and after that it's just like the conclusion and you retire happily ever after. Uh-oh. Until the next plot twist happens, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh life. No. So the thing is, while we do have this, discontent, however, like depending on severity, it may range just like a little bit of like going out of our way, like a slight annoyance, or to like leagues of like going out of our way to fixing, like murdering someone even. Like we go pretty far to fix whatever we have. And to fix things, we have entire careers like centered around problem solving, because this is how passionate humans are in stamping out discontent. This is how much it irritates us. This is what like drives humans. And it's kind of weird, but it's just life, you know? Like we don't ever find true, like unlimited happiness. And maybe we don't have to, because otherwise we wouldn't do anything else.
Yeah,
right. As they say, human curiosity is bottomless, but human greed is also bottomless. And it's what drives us to further improve upon ourselves. But it also causes the downfall of many, such as lottery winners. They get all that money and they just spend it all.
Right. And then they
build their lavish lifestyle.
Yeah. And, you know, they find themselves in a worse pit than where they started out from. If you're not responsible.
Right. But if the human society was able to somehow live without discontent, we would have to live in some sort of utopia-like environment for it to ever come into being.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't think humans can ever live like contently with each other if they aren't like all in a way. I don't want to say it, but if you're not equal, then how can you ever be content if someone's always better than you in something? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right, but equality isn't always a good thing. I don't know if you guys read Harrison Bergeron.
Ooh, I haven't.
So it's like a dystopia about where everybody is equal and they have to wear masks and stuff. And then those who are more athletic than others, they have to wear ankle weights to slow them down. And then, so the title is about Harrison Bergeron, and this guy is super talented. So he's good looking. He's super strong. He's nerfed. And he has all the talents in the world, right? So he's put into jail because he's trying to flaunt he's trying to use his talents, even though the world is supposedly equal. So in some ways, equality isn't always the best, but I feel like in other ways, the way, like racism is not good, obviously. Being equal in that type of way is good, but talents need to be showcased, in my opinion.
There's aspects that needs to like have equity and equality to them, but it's also like areas where like you got to give free rein to your own talents and abilities.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Oh, by the way, while reading this book and this chapter especially, I actually encountered a typo within my Doom book, like the official Doom book. I checked the PDF as well, but it's only in my Doom book. So the count says the word, like, how do you say this? Procès verbal. It's like a French word, okay, guys.
Yeah. I think, that's probably right.
Yeah. So my initially said process verbal, and I was like, wait, what? What is process verbal?
processing the language process.
Yeah, I was like, it's a Duke like having like computer moments, like processing.
I could see the spinning circle above his head. Yeah. You know, the loading symbol, loading infinite loop.
I was like, there's no way. But then the Baron, like right afterwards, says the right one, like process verbal, right afterwards. And I searched it up. I was like, in the book, the PDF, where does it say? And it actually says process verbal. I was like, oh, it's actually my book that's wrong. I was like, oh, my bad. I guess the publisher didn't catch it or the editor didn't catch it. And it actually means a report of typical legal proceedings of assembly. So the Baron was just worried that Count Ferry had actually some actual legal like cases setting up against him in the background in preparation for calling him out. So
I see.
This is interesting.
I see. So, I mean, yeah, someone got a little too overzealous with autocorrect, right? But, I mean, did you... So you said that, you know, there's some threat filed against the Baron or something like that, but what do y'all think are like the details of that? Because, I mean, it's not really clear exactly what he means when there's like a pro se verbal against him.
Right. I thought he was just subtly threatening the Baron, but I wasn't really sure, because it did say that the Count chuckled to make it look like a joke, but I can't help but think there's another meaning behind it.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, it's that he's trying to say that the outcome of the conversation will bring the Baron to his doom, but that doesn't really make sense to me either.
Yeah. I think maybe the count was, I remember like he threatened like some of the accounting stuff, like accounting fraud for some of the Choem companies, like spice trading. So maybe they have a tiny bit of leverage there, but I don't think it's enough to crash the Harkonnens, even if they take out the Baron there. So to me, it's just like an empty bluff that the count thinks is going to work more than it actually will work. I highly doubt accounting fraud will crash a massive corporation. Like, it doesn't work in our world. I'm sure it won't work in their world either.
It's just, you know, there's so many like different.
Yeah, but just pay settlement fees. Like, yeah, it's like $1 billion, but that's like a year or two.
I think less, probably. Yeah. A day of spice.
Just a gram of spice.
Yeah, just because one gram of spice is enough to buy a house or something. So just imagine.
Yeah.
Imagine how much.
A small loan of $1 billion and you have a bag of spice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine how much the Fremen can churn out, right? So, yeah.
They'd be rich.
And there's another threat here, actually, that's more understandable. So somehow the Emperor has to approve a choice of heir. So Fade hasn't successfully or fully passed the test of becoming the heir. And it's really interesting that the Emperor has to approve it. And there's not really a direct inheritance of office, you know, from that the previous ruler chooses the next ruler kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I thought that whoever the Baron chose would be the heir no matter what. But it looks like the Emperor has a say in who gets to be the next Harkonnen ruler.
It doesn't make sense to me because, like, what happens if the Emperor chooses someone not within like your own family? Like, that's obviously grounds for revolt at that point. So it just seems
imagine he chooses Atreides to be the next Harkonnen ruler.
Well, I mean, I don't know if the Emperor can choose. I think it's more of the Emperor just has to approve, but I don't think the Emperor can actually dictate.
So like they can nominate but just have to like approve it. So that
I think it's more of a nominating process, because then it would be kind of weird, I feel, if the Emperor is the one. Then these wouldn't be barons and dukes and stuff. They would just be governors.
Right.
So, yeah, because if the Emperor is the person at the top of the food chain, then that's what would happen, I think. Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, the Count is quite passive aggressive here in general. He's just really passive aggressive. Yeah. He is. He has that mentality, that facial expression, super controlled. Yeah. So anyway, so we've gotten to my quote, and I'll read it again. There's nothing like the arena to expose the true person from beneath the mask. So it's pretty short, but I think this quote is fascinating because a lot of people don't really show their true colors until they're put into a hot situation, right? They're in hot water. And I mean, lots of times people act nice and whatnot, but when their well-being is at stake and there's actual risk to them, then they act like a totally different person. It's literally, I wouldn't call it multiple personality disorder, but it's almost like they just totally forgot about all their previous morals. And
it's just society, like we're taught to be nice.
And also it's kind of normal, I guess, because you're supposed to be nice in society, but you know, self-preservation and whatnot. But I mean, here basically this quote is Fade showing his true colors. So we haven't really gotten to it yet, but you know, he has this black knife that isn't really what it seems, and he has this word that, you know, has some other, that does some other things, and you know, this elaborate plan. Yeah, I mean, there's this elaborate plan that, you know, that he set up and, you know, everything else. And I mean, I'm not sure what the Emperor is looking for in a ruler, but if the Emperor is looking for a ruler that brutalizes his opponents and, you know, just is super subservient, then maybe he's found Fade. But if the Emperor is looking for a ruler that rules with kindness and with benevolence and reason, then, you know, Fade is definitely not the fit here. Yeah,
definitely not.
Yeah,
I'm not really sure what the Emperor's criteria is, though.
Yeah, because
the Duke was definitely the latter of what you described, which is kind and benevolent, but he got taken out. So I think the Emperor just wants a puppet or just people who will be loyal to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Emperor, I don't think he cares too much about the day-to-day goings of like a house or whatever. I think he just cares about results for political power or like to consolidate power.
Right.
Especially in achieving his own goals versus like the Bene Gesserit, because he's like not completely free. Like even the Emperor has responsibilities or obligations to the Bene Gesserit because of the awkward role that he's in.
Oh yeah. So really it's a circle of power. I think it's just Bene Gesserit, the Emperor, the Landsrat, you know, to Fremen, to Bene Gesserit. Yeah, so it's just everything, honestly. Everything all at once. It's kind of crazy.
Also, a pattern I noticed with the Bene Gesserit is that they're all beautiful, or like subjectively beautiful. Uh-huh. So I wonder if that's like, specifically choose people that will end up beautiful, or they have some sort of thing that makes them that way.
They're honestly pretty objectively beautiful, I feel like.
You have to, no?
Yeah, I think they're, like, I mean, of course beauty is subjective, but like in a more, you know, in a majority.
So like the majority subjective is the objective.
Yeah, like that's what I'm thinking. Pretty, yeah. I mean, if you go with the, you know, Petrarchan ideal or something like that, or the ideal standard of beauty, right? That then you would, I feel like you would, you know, get a Bene Gesserit or something like that. Yeah, yeah. So
I wonder how they all end up that way, though.
I mean, we only have two cases. I mean, I don't think the Reverend Mother was beautiful by any means.
Yeah, but she's aged.
Yeah, also, she's, yeah, that's guy, true. Guy.
She's like
aged.
Old,
yeah.
Like
she's a hag. Yeah, old hag.
Yeah, I don't know.
She turned into a witch, a true witch.
Honestly, though, that's what I think. You know, no wonder they call the Bene Gesserit witches. They see the Reverend Mother and they go, yeah. Yeah, they assume the Reverend Mother's representative, you know. That's anyways. Yeah, so
okay,
yeah,
so
you're
I
right.
Think one, yeah. One thing that Lady Femi did say, which I found most curious, was that she called it a curious custom that Fade Rautha had the color white representing poison on his, well, like traditionally on his blades, and then the color black representing purity. Because at least in like most Western culture and media, it's typically white always represents purity because it like brings light or whatever onto everything, allowing like all to be seen. Well, black is typically associated with representing evil because of like the reminder of like the darkness that hides corruption. Mm-hmm. So I agree with Lady Femrine that interesting color choices when it comes to distinguishing poison or not.
I mean, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but from what I think the it kind of shows the Baron has this twisted definition of good and evil, flipping these colors. Mm. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I agree with that because white is the absence of all colors and black is created by mixing all of the colors together.
I think it's the opposite.
Oh, is it?
It depends on if it's light or depends on if it's like paint, you know?
Yeah, in like painting, it's just like you have to mix all the colors together to get
Okay. I was thinking of light spectrum. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, if in terms of light spectrum, it's the opposite, but yeah, but in terms of painting, it's that way. So it's interesting that the roles have been reversed, but I guess it's just for this case. But for some reason, I always imagined the Baron to be wearing black, which is quite ironic because he's the farthest thing from pure.
Yeah, I mean, if he wears black, you know, in his eyes, he's pure, and we know the connotations, but he's not pure. If he wears white, he seems pure to us, and it's not because normally we think white is pure, right? And it kind of is awkward. So either way, it's really awkward is my point. He needs to wear some, I don't know what the color exactly between black and white is, but
you know. I see him wearing red, to be honest. Just like,
really?
Oh, really?
The color of blood, you know?
Yeah,
I just always thought the Harkonnen colors was
I imagine him celebrating Chinese New Year or something in red. And that's, I don't know, whenever I think of wearing red robes, that's just always what I imagine.
Fair.
I mean, as an Asian, I suppose, right? That's just what skips my mind, you know, Baron asking for Hongbao.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
Yeah, hand him a red envelope.
Red envelope with some poison inside. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's what Yue should have done, honestly.
Honestly, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we actually got confirmation this chapter that they do indeed use shields in the arena. So we weren't sure about this a couple chapters ago. We thought it was just knife-to-knife combat, just like the bout between Paul and Jamis. But no, they actually do use shields.
But half shields, it doesn't cover everything.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still a shield.
Yeah, I guess you get,
Yeah.
Okay, so now we get to my quote, and I'll repeat it again. So it goes, I dedicate this truth to... ... And he paused, knowing his uncle would think, the young fool's going to dedicate to Lady Fenring after all and cause a ruckus... ... To my uncle and patron, the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen.
Woo.
Okay, so I honestly laughed out loud when I read this because it reminded me of elementary kids who raise their hand to rat out their friend, but instead they go ask to use the restroom.
Yeah.
So he actually trolled his own uncle, who's the Baron. So
that's pretty funny.
Imagine if the Baron said, "You're no longer my heir now because of this."
I know, like just like how like I like how he's just teasing the Baron. I don't know. He's such a tease, you know. He's just definitely like ceremonially dedicated the key to Lady Femri, because that would have caused so much mayhem for the Harkonnens. It would have brought about like so much great disappointment to Uncle. That I would have loved to read it in this chapter.
Yeah.
But anyways, we do love like anything that just upsets the bear and makes him livid. It was just so funny reading the bear like exhale in relief when he heard his name instead of Lady Femri's name.
Uh-huh. Right. I think, yeah, I thought that was pretty funny too. You know, it's just something you totally didn't expect. Well, you didn't expect it for a very short while because he corrects himself very quickly.
Yeah, Fade's got spunk. I respect
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I respect that. Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't have tact, at least he has wit.
So, yeah. So. Kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, let's talk about his wit here. So we kind of get a chance to see some of Fade Ralph's abilities to scheme. To be honest, his plan, it's a little, needs a little more fleshing out. It's a little underdeveloped in some areas. And it's kind of for a really dumb reason. Like, he's only scheming so he can have a more enjoyable time in the arena. And to me, it kind of expresses a lot of who Fade is as a person. Because it's kind of disappointing, not going to lie, that, like, after all, would you just, like, want him to be your ruler when all he does is scheme about his own pleasure? Like, oh, killing the next gladiator, getting my 100th kill, and then maybe, like, ascending to 1,000 or more.
Yeah, I mean, is honestly, you know, I think this whole thing is just a terrible indication of his character. I have to say, because he's disrespecting the rules of this fight like a coward. You know, and coward is a strong word, but I feel like, you know, for people who break rules like this, it's pretty fitting. Because it, you know, he added poison to the unpoisoned blade, the black blade, which is supposed to be pure. And, you know, he has this trigger word that will give him an unfair advantage in the middle of the fight. So he's just taking whatever he can just for his own pleasure and to prove a point. But, I mean, that's his twisted reason to show everyone that they can't expect what he'll do and to instill fear in all of his future subjects and potential political opponents. You know, this is what I can do. You know, you never know basically which hand is holding the poison. Yeah, so it's just, you know, you never know what's coming for you if you decide to oppose me, right? So that's just, he's at an age, ripe young age of 17, he's already thinking this way and he's already trying to, you know, plan for the future by ruling by fear, really, you know. I think
he plans to take up his uncle's mantle.
Yeah, I mean, contrary to Leto, he wants to rule with this iron fist. And I have to say, you know, I lose a lot of respect for him here, yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't expect Fade to do this because he doesn't seem like he has the intelligence to pull something off like this, but I guess the Harkonnen never failed to disappoint me.
Yeah, just keep going lower and lower and lower.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, actually, kind of give a bit of a reveal next page. And, okay, we're going to find out that the plan wasn't exactly his plan. Like, it wasn't originally a Fade Ralta plan. It was partly his plan, at least the having fun part, but it stemmed off of Hawat's plan. So, Hawat is still alive and locked up somewhere within the Harkonnen's base. And he has somehow, even though being locked up, has convinced Fade to not drug a gladiator so that he can have a more exciting match. Although, meanwhile, like, Hawat is betting on the gladiator to win so that he could, like, kill the Knob Baron somehow and just, like, deal, like, a final blow to the Baron in some, like, I don't know, like, wayward technique through the Baron's son. Well, not the son, the niece or nephew, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So he's fighting a proxy war through the gladiator.
He's fighting a proxy war, basically. Yeah.
I don't know. It wouldn't be surprising if Hawat was, you know, controlling the gladiator mentally somehow. I don't know.
He has like a little controller.
Yeah, he has a little remote control in his pocket or something.
Xbox gaming like Street Fighter 2.
Yeah. Welcome to cloud gaming of the future.
Oh no. Literally you're vicariously playing. Yeah. It's
not GeForce now, it's Atreides now.
Yeah, that's the technology of the future, indeed. This is this is what we're imagining 10,000 years in the future.
This is what we live for.
Yeah. I mean, but I think it's just crazy how many people are just dying for Fade's plan and how Fade is just buying this whole plan, right? And, you know, his handler could die and his handler doesn't seem like did anything wrong. I mean, it's just brutal how he accepts all of these deaths to further his own prospects. I mean, I keep saying, but I've just basically lost respect for him because his characterization these chapters is just so different from not scornful, but the inquisitive and kind of, you know, rebellious kid that we saw in chapter 2, right? He just seems some he had so much potential with the way he was presented in chapter two, and now he's just, you know, totally given over to the dark side, right? So, I mean, another interesting thing is what does Fade have against this slave master? So it's a weird grudge to hold. It's just some slave master. I mean, I don't know why that Fade is trying to get this slave master killed.
Yeah, I noticed that as well, but I don't think he really has anything against the slave master, but he just needs him gone so he can install someone who's more loyal to him.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe it's to make his fights more fun, because the slave master
to fit his agendas better.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the slave master controls too much of his entertainment by, like, deciding who he fights against. So maybe he just wants to put someone of his own in charge so he can have more fun in the arena.
Uh-huh.
It seems dumb, to be honest, just to kill someone, but I feel like that's the type of person Fade Valda is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, killing for pleasure. Yeah, sounds like him. Sounds like him, and sounds like the Baron. Yeah.
Right.
Or maybe also, Pitter.
Also, I'm not really convinced that Hawad is actually, like, trying to help the Harkonnens or in any way, because he's just, like you said earlier, he was trying to kill the Na Baron through the gladiator. But I'm not really sure why he thinks that's going to work, because I think he's much smarter than that. So I wonder what his real goal is.
Yeah, I wonder what geopolitical, like, impression he's trying to make on the Baron in front of, like, Count and Lady Fairy. I don't know if he even knows that he's in the presence of Count and Lady Fairy this entire event.
I don't think he does.
Maybe he does. I don't know.
Yeah.
Supposed to be smart.
I think he does, probably. Yeah, I mean, he definitely... I mean, given how the Baron trusts Hawat now, or Fade at least trusts Hawat now so much, right?
He might have picked up.
He was probably privy to some insider information. Yeah.
Okay. I guess that makes sense.
I do want to point something out, though. We just love to see the gladiator representing the Atreides with the hawk, you know?
Yep, they're back. We love the Atreides, and they're back.
He's kind of... Okay, he scarred himself to make an arrow pointing to the hawk drawn in blood, presumably his own blood. But at least we know that Hawat hasn't swapped sides, you know? No matter how much the Baron is telling Count Fenrir, we know that Hawat's still loyal and still has a very loyal servant who's willing to fight for him as a gladiator, representing Atreides' colors on his on the green leotard he's wearing.
Yeah, I mean, that's some next level of crazy, you know? Yeah. You want to emphasize something, so you cut yourself and draw it with your own blood. That's...
I know. Wish we had school spirit like that.
Oh, no. I don't want to see a lot of people walking around with scars and schools. That's not my type of school spirit. Yeah, but...
I mean, last year, though, for like school spirit, so we have a rivalry with another school, and then they brought a junk car to our school.
Oh, really?
We somehow our school won the football game, and then the car became our mascot for a day. It was pretty
funny. Oh, really?
Yeah, even though it was meant to be like a diss against us, but it ended up being our mascot. It was so funny.
Wow, that's actually kind of funny. I had no clue. Yeah. That's really
Funny. I'm not really care too much about the school rivalry, but it was still pretty funny.
Same, yeah.
It's just funny seeing the interactions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just it reminds me of the MIT Celtic rivalry where they brought a cannon all the way across the country. I mean, a lot of rivalries go to some interesting lengths. So I mean, here it's the same thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's the spirit that counts. And you know, he has nothing to lose with just a little bleeding. He's gonna bleed a lot more later.
Yep.
Yeah. So this Alaka drug that that the gladiator is supposed to be drugged with, you know, it's really interesting. Basically, it's supposed to color your skin, but the gladiator doesn't have it, so he's actually painted, you know, with that color. And you know, it's a drug, like I Googled it, and it's a drug administered to gladiators to eliminate their sense of self-preservation. So it's really weird because it's a Dune drug. Yeah.
Oh, it's a Dune
drug. Yeah, it's a Dune drug. It's not a real drug. That would be kind of... that would violate crazy. So many ethical guidelines, right? But it's weird because I'm assuming that it basically makes it so that the gladiator knows they're going to die. But it's kind of counterintuitive because the man is most dangerous when they aren't trying to preserve themselves and they're just trying to get whatever hits in they can, right? And
Well, I'm not going to say the cornered rat cliche because you guys know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But... desperate times definitely call for desperate measures, and a person with a wild look in their eyes is, it's like when they're the most vulnerable, but it's also when they're the most dangerous, and you can't predict what they're going to do next.
Mm-hmm. It also makes for the most exciting like show to watch.
Right, right. Out. I think I saw a quote somewhere where it was something like, "I can't fight against fools because I can't predict their next move."
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're still fools. So as long as you stick to your training, they'll eventually mess up to some extent.
Right.
Just stay aware, stay alert, and you know it won't go too wrong. You know, of course,
but you to be trained.
Yeah, but with fights like these, you know, there's always a risk, of course, that you'll die. But I mean, as long as you stick to your guns, right? As long as Fade sticks to his guns, which he really doesn't. he showed up to a gunfight with a bazooka. You know, with that poison knife and the word, and you know, showed up with so much extra.
It's got the insurance, what can I say?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so here we see some of Fade's long game plan. So his insurance isn't going to go to waste, you know, life insurance goes pretty far. Yeah. He knows Hawat's dangerous, and he also knows that Hawat probably does want to kill him, even though he's agreeing to the plan right now. So he allows this fight to happen only because, well, Fade trusts his own abilities as a gladiator. You know, 100th kill, he's been through some stuff. He's got some experience. He's not a noob anymore. And to be fair, we see that he isn't doing terrible against the chosen fighter. So from the first exchange of blows, we see Fade actually coming out on top, dodging an attack while lodging a barb deep inside the forearm that will slow the other gladiator down. And let's see like if Fade's little constructed situation will work out in his best interest, however, whether or not he'll actually earn the respect of like all the Harkonnens and all the people watching, and along with like the fear of his strength and prowess in battle, because that's what he ultimately wants. He wants respect, and that's why he's allowing this not drugged, like crazed man to come into the battle arena so that he could somehow show that he's like more superior and like he's actually good, not just
right.
Like,
Fade's strength is really underrated, because even while the other gladiators were drugged in his previous matches, I think it's still really impressive that he was able to win almost 100 of them, right?
I think it's super cool to see that, like, even though we know that the others were drugged, Fade is still good now, even though he's facing an expert fighter, like a loyal man of the Atreides. So it's just really nice to see Fade's experience shining, even though he's a bad guy. But we are getting to the end of this. Our end of the reading for this part of this episode. So we're gonna conclude the fight in next week's episode.
Not tomorrow's episode.
Not tomorrow. I'm not reading it tonight.
We can't get to it tonight, but we'll get to it next week, of course. Yeah. So.
Yep. Tune in to find out the outcome of this heated battle.
Yep. With that note, I believe that concludes the discussion for this episode of the Do Not Enter podcast. Make sure to read to the end of chapter 35 and tune in next time when we discuss it. As always, thanks to all of you listeners for being patient with us and being interested in our thoughts. Follow us on Instagram at DoNotEnter, Reddit @U/DoNotEnter, Twitter at DoNotEnter, and email us at DoNotEnter@gmail.com. That is DoNotEnter@gmail.com. Please contact us with questions, feedback, or I dare say, it's my turn.
Rock no snurriker.
I read like chunks of it backwards.
Whoa.
So I split it up into three chunks and read them backwards. Yeah. I have to get creative now because we're running out of random ways to say.
I'm never going to run out of them.
Yeah. We'll just switch to a different word and apply the same process. Yeah. But if we made any mistakes, don't hesitate in letting us know. And we'll be happy to fix that. Please give us a review on iTunes or Spotify. It only takes a few seconds of your time. Just go and make an account, of course, and then go click the 5-star button because it's the only one that exists. The purpose is twofold. One, it helps get our podcast up the charts so we get our podcast to a wider variety of listeners, but also it helps let us know that we're doing a good job and motivates us to keep creating content for you guys. So we would really appreciate it if you took the time to do that, and it really does help. Otherwise, that's about it. So have a great week, and we will see you all back very soon.
See you guys.
Bye, guys.